This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And Kevin McCarthy has already said he won't allow Representative Swalwell, Schiff, or Omar to have committee assignments. We have a thrilling show today. Former Congressman Mondaire Jones stops by to tell us all about the fuckery. Then we'll talk to Semaphore's political reporter Dave Weigel about more fuckery in Congress. But first, we have Washington Post columnist, the one, the only, the great George Conway. Welcome to Fast Politics, my friend and yours, George Conway.
Thank you for having me again, Molly. I didn't think you were ever going to have me on again.
Oh, really? Because
after you went down to Washington for your secret project that you wouldn't tell me about, said, don't tell anybody when I'm coming down to Washington. Why? I can't tell you. And then you interviewed the vice president, and I figured out that I'm off the list forever. You just go back to your liberal roots, and I'll never hear from you again.
No, are you kidding me? You know, we had to have you back.
Okay.
So, George.
Yes, ma'am.
What the fuck has happened to your Republican Party? They were, like, a little better, and then they got worse again.
Oh, they're getting worse. They're going to continue to get worse, and they can't help themselves.
Why are they getting worse? I mean, they had this midterm. They had their asses handed to them. They barely performed.
Because you're not focusing on the incentive structure for these people. The people who are running the show now are essentially threatening to blow everything up if they don't get their way. And they don't care. They don't care what happens in these other districts. They don't care if they get anything passed. They just want to create a ruckus and to get on TV and solicit money. And no normal incentives apply to them. And as the Republican Party becomes more beholden to these people, it chases off more reasonable people, you know, real, and including some real conservatives, and you get more of the same. And it's basically, it's like they're distilling the party down to the, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world. And that's, you know, you've seen, this has been happening for a number of years. You see it in all of these congressmen who are pretty good, who don't run anymore, or who get turned on by the right. You're boiling the Republican Party down to the bare minimum was what's going to happen. And they're not going to, you know, sooner or later, they're not going to get a majority. And then their incentives are going to get even worse, because if they can't govern, why bother even trying to appeal to the people who aren't voting for them? It's this weird downward spiral.
So let's talk about Donald J. Trump. He's still, you know, what I saw with this leadership contest was whether or not he was involved, he was presented as having MTG called him on the phone, held the phone up so they could take the picture.
Yeah, and everybody waved him off. Again, that was probably performative. Who wants to talk to the president? And, no one.
Right.
No good can come from it. I don't think there's much to be drawn from that. I don't think it really enhances his standing. He is who he is, and they genuflect to him, but they don't really take him that seriously.
He has some legal problems. Can you talk to us about these legal problems?
Yes, apparently.
Again.
Well, his legal problems are the same legal problems we've talked about before. They're just getting closer and closer to their culmination, although it's going to be another year or two before a lot of this stuff works itself out. The Georgia grand jury, the Fulton County grand jury, the special grand jury that was convened at the request of Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis, has apparently prepared a report and submitted it to the court. And then the only question is when and how it gets released, and then whether Fonnie Willis takes that report and brings it to a regular grand jury, which would have the power to indict people, including Donald J. Trump. So that's something that we can look forward to happening in the next few weeks to see how that plays out. You know, we've got the special counsel, Jack Smith, who's busy, 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 apparently. And
he's hired a bunch of new people.
He seems to be on the job and on the ball. And Andrew Weissman has called him aggressive.
Right.
And Andrew Weissman was himself an aggressive prosecutor. So, you know, we'll see what comes of that, too. I think the Mar-a-Lago documents case is pretty strong. And the other cases, we'll see what happens with the January 6th cases. But he's going to work his way through that, too.
So what about the people who say, well, Trump had all these documents, but Biden also had documents? Debunk. 12 documents in the Biden Foundation.
There's the volume of the documents. There's the location of the documents. But the most important distinguishing factor is what these men did with their documents. When Biden's lawyers found these documents, apparently in the beginning of November, they called up the White House counsel's office, and the next day they were delivered to the National Archives, where they belong.
Right.
And, that's in stark contrast to the behavior of the former president, it was believed by the archives that he had documents. He stonewalled them for a period of time, gave them some documents back, was told again that they thought he had some documents. He gave some more back, but not all of them. He moved some around in the basement of his golf club, his little resort in Florida, and had people move the boxes around, went through the boxes himself. Then he was subpoenaed, and he produced a few more documents, and then had somebody issue a false certification that he produced all the documents, which turned out to be a lie, which we found out when the Justice Department, after showing a federal magistrate judge probable cause that a crime was committed by someone, got a search warrant. And that's how we found out about that. And if Donald Trump had done what Biden had done, or what Biden's people did for him, when he was told, hey, we think you've got some stuff, he says, let me go look, and giving it all back, even though the volume was much greater, we would be talking about any of this right now. It's a much more serious situation with Donald J. Trump. And, on top of that, who do we trust on this? You've got one guy who makes a few mistakes here and there,
right.
And then you've got another guy who, with all due respect to Congressman Santos, is the biggest pathological liar we've ever seen in this nation's politics, and can't be trusted on anything.
Right.
So there's a big difference.
Yeah.
And then look, but that's fine. It's fine. I think it's appropriate that the Justice Department investigate the circumstances behind the finding of these Biden vice presidency documents, see who had them, how they try to figure out, if they can, how these limited number of documents found their way into this storage closet in Washington, and see what people knew about it, if anything. But chances are it was, inadvertent. And if you say, oops, it's like anything else. If you find something in your house that doesn't belong to you, either because you picked it up somewhere or somebody left it, you know, you call them up and you return it to them.
Right.
And that's what seems to have happened in the Biden situation. You don't go and sit and hide it, and somebody comes up to your door and says, hey, we think we might have left our wallet here. Say, oh, I don't know, here's a credit card, and slam the door, and then wait for them to bang on the door again, say, well, there was some money in there. Oh, here's a dollar.
Right.
And then say, there isn't anything more, when the cops come, and then, you know, have the cops issue a search warrant to get into your house. You know, that's a lot different, I think.
Right. Right.
But, you know, you're not going to hear that on Fox News.
And Trump is, he does still have other, you know, there's the fake electors.
He's got, well, the fake electors, the whole January 6th thing. The January 6th investigation is a number of fake electors, the pressure on Mike Pence, which was, you know, an attempt to get him to commit fraud. The call to Raffensperger is a potential federal offense as well as a state offense. I mean, there's so many aspects of that that can lead to charges. He's got a big problem there.
You ignore Trump at your own peril.
Yeah, you shouldn't ignore Trump.
You think he ends up being the candidate?
Quite possibly. I mean, you've got people like Asa Hutchinson talking about running for president. You've got Mike Pompeo. I know you're excited for this. I think we need to have a special podcast. His book is coming out on January 24th. I'm sure it's going to be a bestseller. You know, we're going to end up talking about that nothing nonstop for a month. And, you know, you've got him going to run. You've got this talk about DeSantis. I don't know if he's actually going to run. But you got a lot of people who think they should be president, and they're sensing weakness. But the problem is they're all going to split the vote. You know, so you can win. It's quite possible to win with, I don't know, 35% of the vote.
The thing is, I mean, we all sort of know that probably Trump won't get reelected, but he still could.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the Democrats would have to, I think they'd have to nominate someone so horrible that people will just stay home. And I don't think they're going to do that. I think people would take their shot, chances with it, any number of people.
Over Donald Trump.
Before they would go back over Donald Trump. People will still crawl on broken glass to vote against Donald Trump, which is what happened in 2000, notwithstanding the pandemic. And I think also that in 2024, he's going to be much more insane than he's ever been.
So say more about that.
Well, you could just see, I mean, you see his statements. He's more detached from reality. He's got fewer people around him to check his impulses. And he's, you know, he's more and more obsessed with, you know, the stolen election. And he's going to get worse. These people who have these personality traits, these malignant narcissists, these psychopaths, they get worse over time. And they don't get better. And he's continuing to get worse. I know it's hard to fathom how he could possibly get worse, but I mean, the one thing that we have consistently seen with Donald J. Trump is that he does get worse. There is always a lower depth to which he can sink, and he will do that. The problem is, it's still not going to be enough to turn away the last 35% of the Republican Party that still is going to support him no matter what. So, you know, he could probably get the nomination.
Are you still a Republican?
No, we've run through this. I left the Republican Party in March of 2018 when I concluded that the Republican Party had become a personality cult. And boy, was I right. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even a third of what it is today.
It seems like every time Republicans lose, right? I mean, they lost the midterms. They lost 2020. Every time they lose, they just...
They won the House. We have Speaker McCarthy.
But I mean, every time they lose, they don't ever learn a lesson. They just want to do it again.
Again, but that's the dynamic I'm talking about, is that the people, you know, you've got these districts where this stuff flies, and they're safe districts, and you know, those people are ready to blow up the party, blow up the House if they don't get their way. So they have an inordinate amount of power. I mean, you know, the Democrats were complaining for 2 years about Senators Sinema and Manchin. Well, they had a lot of power because they made the difference between, you know, 40, 48 and 50.
Right.
And you needed Kamala Harris to make it 51. Well, these people, you know, just a few of them, as we saw with the 15 speakers' votes, basically shut down the House's ability to function at any time. And one of them at any point can make a motion under the new rules of the House to vacate the chair and throw out the speaker. The speaker is completely beholden to them.
I mean, the more moderate Republicans could also do that.
They could, but there are not that many of them left.
But some of them, I mean...
Well, the only way they could make a difference is they'd have to vote with the Democrats. That would be fatal for them.
I mean, it might be fatal in a primary, you know, in one of those tight districts.
It's fatal in a primary, then that's it. Primaries are huge threats to them.
Right.
Their object is to not get burned from the right and try to get by. But it doesn't work.
So who do you think this sort of... head of the House caucuses right now?
I don't think there is a head, but you can see that some people have...
Matt Gaetz has come out of this.
Gaetz, he clearly lost a lot of friends. But, you know, he's got his younger friends elsewhere.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, I didn't say anything untoward. I'm not saying what he did with it. You know, he hangs out with them.
Right. Certainly not. We haven't heard anything more about any of that either.
No. No. I think they're not. I mean, I think the last I heard is that they're not going in that direction, the Justice Department.
But even though they did a plea deal with his wingman.
Yeah, but it may be that the witnesses aren't all that great. Who knows?
Right.
On the particular things that they were investigating him about, which I don't really want to talk about. You see Marjorie Taylor Greene walking around like she owns the place.
Yeah. Because she does.
She sort of does, yeah.
It's unbelievable. So you think they shut down the government? It's only going to get worse.
Yes, it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. I mean, you know, you've got the debt ceiling issues. You've got the next budget that they'd have to put through and the next of these appropriations bills. There's so many trigger points, so many places where things can go off the rails. And a lot of it's going to be performative.
So don't plan any national park vacations.
No, I would not do that.
George Conway, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level.
Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. Mondaire Jones is a former congressman from New York's 17th District. Welcome to Fast Politics, Mondaire Jones.
Thanks for having me back. I feel like a regular at this point.
Well, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted earlier today that you have to become a regular until you're back in Congress. Sorry.
In fact, I almost liked that tweet, but I didn't want people to think that by virtue of liking it, that I was announcing my intention to run in 2024. I've still not made a decision on that.
What the hell is going on over there? You were in Congress.
Yeah, and what you're referring to happened in the 117th Congress in January of 2021, shortly, as you'll recall, before January 6th really opened a new chapter for us in Congress. But, you know, prior to that point, prior to January 6th, we were going through the process of the first order of business, electing a speaker. It was something that was not controversial. There were a few people who had expressed misgivings. Some people had, you know, previously run on not intending to support Nancy Pelosi, but she was able to cobble together a true majority in the House. And contrast that with Republicans having to go to a 15th ballot, which broke all records except for those set in the 1850s in this country, to simply name the next Speaker of the House. And I think it was really an invitation into what we're going to be seeing for the next 2 years, unfortunately, and in utter incompetence and utter inability to get things done.
On the 15th vote, he did win. No one knows what he's promised.
I think some people know what he's promised.
Discuss.
I think the most powerful people in the House GOP caucus know what Kevin McCarthy promised. And by most powerful people, I certainly mean Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Matt Rosendale, and others who were part of that 20 to 21 that became a whole bunch of people who voted present at the end, who couldn't vote for him, but who also didn't want to vote against him so that they could finally get on with that process. I have been a little uncomfortable on behalf of some of my former Republican colleagues because just today I've heard a number of Republicans do interviews with the networks in which they said that Kevin McCarthy did not make promises to put people on specific committees. Well, you know, you should only say things that you have actual knowledge of and other things you may just want to hedge because, frankly, it's common to make promises to appoint people to specific committees. I feel quite confident that Speaker Pelosi did that in the past, and she's a much better county than Kevin McCarthy is. I think the issue is that this rules package really gives the keys to the extremists in the party. And you will not hear me use the word moderate on this podcast. As someone said on Twitter a few days ago, there are no moderates in the House GOP caucus. There are lunatics and there are cowards. Even the members from Biden districts, congressional districts that Biden won, of which there are many on the Republican side this cycle, they all voted for a rules package that would allow just one of them to make a motion to replace the Speaker of the House, to, in this rules package, gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, which is of deep concern to me as someone who cares about ethics and who recently completed a term on the Ethics Committee and who knows that 50% of the casework that the ethics committee deals with is casework that was initially referred by the Office of Congressional Ethics, which does the preliminary legwork on those cases. So I am deeply concerned by those provisions and other provisions, like putting members of the Freedom Caucus on key committees like the Rules Committee. This is a recipe for dysfunction and disaster these next 2 years. And all of these Republicans, these so-called moderates, they all voted for it with the exception of Tony Gonzalez. And get this, Tony Gonzalez's objection isn't even a good one. Like, I'm glad he voted against it, but like his objection is that they're going to cut the defense budget by $75 billion, which he alleges will make us weaker as a country. Not true at all, because the defense budget, as you know, was full of lobbyist giveaways.
Right. The one thing that any of us would agree with is the reason why he, you know, yes. It's that meme of the worst person you know, right? Having a good idea. Like, cut the defense budget. Don't threaten me with a good time. So it does seem like it's just they are in there. They are going to go full Benghazi all the 24/7.
I think that's right. You'll see investigations into Hunter Biden's private parts. You will see a false inquiry into the various federal agencies that happen to be investigating people like Jim Jordan and Scott Perry.
Right, right.
I do not believe that that is a coincidence. I don't believe that they're trying to gut the Office of Congressional Ethics after the January 6th committee just referred people like Kevin McCarthy and Jim Jordan to the Ethics Committee. I don't believe that they're trying to embarrass the FBI and the Department of Justice, but after the FBI seized Scott Perry's cell phone last August pursuant to a warrant and is investigating him for trying to overturn the 2020 election. This is all part of a plan to keep bad actors from being investigated and from causing further embarrassment to the Republican Party. And we haven't even said the name George Santos.
Talk to me about the fabulous, the talented Mr. Santos.
I first met George in November of 2020, if that's his real name.
Right. He does not seem to answer to it, which makes me think it might not be.
I first met George in November 2020 because we were in orientation. And at the time, because of the delay with which New York State was counting votes by mail.
He hadn't been elected, but he was it could have been, right?
The race had not yet been called for Tom Suozzi. We all knew that Tom was going to win that race. But in the meantime, George Santos went down to Washington, and he was part of our freshman orientation.
Well, why? I mean, he does. That's kind of how he rolls. I mean, he might have just stayed in Congress if he could have.
I think until they told him he had to leave, he would have absolutely stayed for the full extent of orientation. He was, ironically, one of the people, if not, I think, the person who asked the most questions, who stood up and went to the microphone the most. And we're all like, dude, you're not even going to be part of this Congress. At some point, he approached me to tell me that he is a gay Republican, which I imagine is something that he did because he knows that I'm gay.
I'm sure you loved it.
Many of these people are pleasant. They will say hi to you in the hallway. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene was in my hallway in the basement of Longworth last term. And you know, people are friendly, but you just got to remember how terrible they are in terms of their policies.
Right.
So, and I remember, you know, after George said that to me, speaking to my colleagues and asking, did you know that there was a gay Republican in the caucus? And everyone was surprised. And so
it's great.
I have to believe that George is actually gay or something, even though I don't want to.
And now he is in Congress. I thought that what Scalise said, where he said he's going to sit down and talk to him, was pretty good. I mean, it's like, what are they going to say to him? Like, don't be a sociopath.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what the federal agencies do with respect to these really troubling things, right? I will tell you, I am and have been increasingly concerned with the politicization of the Ethics Committee, specifically concerned by the behavior of my Republican colleagues on that committee. But the Department of Justice, specifically the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of New York, is probing several of the allegations against Mr. Santos. And I think it's untenable that he would remain in office for these next 2 years. But Kevin McCarthy would love to have him for as long as he can, because it's a district that, you know, should be represented by a Democrat when you look at Biden's margin of victory. And, you know, it's a district, frankly, that I believe Tom Suozzi could win all over again.
Oh, yeah.
If there were a special election.
Well, and also Republicans have decided, or at least they made the machinations, that they are going to try to kick from committees, kick out Eric Swalwell, Adam Schiff, and Ilhan Omar as a sort of payback for Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, that says everything you need to say when you talk about this 118th Congress.
When you look at the criticism of Adam Schiff, for example, who has been one of the democracy champions that we've had, someone who has been taking Donald Trump on in MAGA extremism, it really reveals that a number of their objections don't have merit. I think, you know, the stuff about Ilhan Omar is rooted in Islamophobia and racism. I mean, look, you can absolutely take people to the mat when it comes to disagreeing with their policy positions. But the idea that, you know, some of these people should not be allowed to serve on their committees is extraordinary.
And again, this is about partisanship. This is not about concern for anything, but to be able to say, look, you took Marjorie Taylor Greene off something. We took Adam Schiff off something.
That's right. You know, some of us, myself included, thought that people would be taken off of all committees. So this is actually more of a modest reprisal than I expected from the Republican parties.
Will you explain?
Marjorie Taylor Greene was taken off all of her committees. Same thing for Paul Gosar. I have not heard Kevin McCarthy say that Adam Schiff cannot serve on any committees in the Congress. I've heard him say he'll be taken off the Intelligence Committee. I've heard him say that Ilhan will be taken off the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Do you have any sort of thoughts on how the Biden administration should handle this continual Benghazi? I mean, do you think they should fight back? Do you think they should ignore it? Do you think, I mean, you know, what's the calculus in your mind?
I think they have to fight back. I think that not taking the Benghazi investigation seriously a few years ago did great harm to Hillary Clinton in the general election. And it wasn't fair. And it was not based in any merit. But, you know, you have to make that case to the American people, because increasingly we have a splintering in our media such that a large segment of the American population will believe that somehow Joe Biden is responsible for the conduct of his son, and potentially, you know, hold that against him when voting in 2024.
It's such an insane and also incredibly stupid time to be alive.
Yeah, the House is pretty raggedy these days.
Do you think that McCarthy will be speaker? Do you think he'll last the whole 118th?
No, I do not. I think that Kevin McCarthy will be lucky to get through the year 2023 as Speaker of the House. Because what's going to happen is that because any person can create a, you know, can require a vote to replace Kevin McCarthy, you're going to have a bunch of Democrats waiting to vote with you with five or so other Republicans on the other side of the aisle to replace Kevin McCarthy. So it's a very fraught straitjacket, to use a word that Matt Gaetz and others have used with respect to Kevin McCarthy.
You heard it here first. Thank you, Mondaer. I hope you will come back.
I will.
To cover this before you start running again. No pressure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Still have to make a decision.
I know you, our dear listeners, are very busy, and you don't have time to sort through the hundreds of pieces of punditry each week. This is why every week I put together a newsletter of my five favorite articles on politics. If you enjoy the podcast, you will love having this in your inbox every Friday. So sign up at fastpoliticspod.com and click the tab to join our mailing list. That's fastpoliticspod.com. Dave Weigel is a political reporter at Semaphore. Dave, welcome to Fast Politics.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
I don't even know where to start here. This GOP House seems kind of incredible to me. I mean, you've been doing this a long time. What is your take here as this starts?
Well, it was both odd to cover and inevitable. And my goal last week with Semaphore was really the first time a bunch of us who joined the publication were out in the House giving people, grabbing them, interviewing them, irritating them. I was not pulling my hair out over what a crazy thing was happening. It was interesting that this had not happened in 100 years, but it was exactly the thing that conservative media had been mitigating towards for a long time. I mean, if you paid attention to Turning Point USA's sort of parallel conservative conferences they've been having. I mean, I watched them in December when Carrie Lake was the special guest and getting most of the attention.
And you've been to a lot of these too.
Well, that one I was just watching remotely. So that's right. If somebody's going to put the whole thing up on a stream, I'm going to watch the stream and then get something else done. But I've been to a lot of it too. Yeah, I've heard a lot of this happening in things that got less coverage. And this, I think what got ignored was Gates and other incumbents who showed up were talking about challenging Kevin McCarthy, talking about not just the demands they'd make, but really in personal terms, saying that this guy was a schmuck who couldn't be trusted and was never going to do what conservatives sent Republicans to Washington to do. Like, this was very hardened. It wasn't just because I've seen a lot of comparison by people on the left to what they wanted their representatives to do when there was a similar narrow Democratic majority in 2021. Like, why didn't you guys get in there and protest her? And a big reason is that even left-wing Democrats who were elected to Congress respect Nancy Pelosi and think she was good at the job. You did hear this drumbeat for years of Republicans saying, one, we don't think this guy's very good at this, and two, in the last few weeks, there's a lot we want that we think the guy's so weak he can't deliver on. So I was looking at it saying, okay, what are they going to pull out of this? Like, the chaos of having to wait a couple days to figure out who's the speaker, that's not really affecting most people. I mean, it's not like the debt limit where you're really worried, okay, I'm getting advice from my broker about what Congress is doing. I wouldn't say no one cared, but this did not have a huge impact on people's lives. It was kind of a free game to play for right-wing members of Congress who said so much on the record you can barely read it all about why they wanted to do this.
So it was inevitable, but it wasn't inevitable.
It was inevitable. I didn't treat it like a crazy event that was going to impact the Republic for generations to come. It was just they saw a bargaining tactic and they used it. And unlike people on the left who were pretty happy with Nancy Pelosi and respected her, people on the right were pretty blatant about how little they respected Kevin McCarthy, right, and didn't think he was going to be worth it in the job. So I was interested in what they're going to extract from the guy, which we're only now learning about.
And we still don't really know, right? Yesterday I saw reporting Nancy Mace saying she didn't know. I saw Democratic Congress people saying they don't know. They don't really know because it's not in the rules package, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the stuff that is most important in terms of how it would affect a normal person who does not care about politics was, okay, what are they going to demand exchange for the debt limit? What are they going to demand exchange for passing normal appropriations bills? And that's still kind of opaque. I mean, we've seen some screenshots of things that they've told members. We don't have something on paper. The rest of this, I mean, the rest of the rules that they were passing, who served on committees, I don't think that materially changed a lot. They were saying before the election they were going to use this email.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of these people think that Kevin McCarthy is a moron. And actually, I'd love to go into this. I know there was a really interesting piece in Politico last year about how Kevin McCarthy is a moron, but people don't really, reporters don't really report that, even though it is sort of a baked in the Kevin McCarthy experience.
Yes, and that was another strange externality about this whole fight last week, is if you polygraphed one of the reporters covering and asked them, did you think, if somebody told you a couple years ago, Kevin McCarthy will be the Republican leader at a time when they have a narrow majority, do you think it'll go well? They would say no. And it's not, I don't like to get into like IQ testing, because I don't think I would beat a lot of people I cover. It's more that he's a very glib and friendly leader who never says no to anyone,
right?
And has been very blatant in the past to his detriment about what his strategy is, and he just has never shown the ability to corral a difficult conference the way that Nancy Pelosi did. That frankly, the way that Pelosi, like, alone among recent Republican leaders, been able to. Paul Ryan could do it for a little while. Remember, right. Paul Ryan becomes Speaker because McCarthy bumbles his way out of contention, doesn't have the votes.
Right. That was the second time that McCarthy did that.
Right. This and so that experience lasted for a lot of people, but a lot of, I mean, I think any Republican leader, and you saw this with some of the members we were all grabbing in the halls, like Dan Bishop and Matt Gaetz, a lot of these guys just said, even a different candidate, if they were part of the Republican leadership, if they were Steve Scalise, if they were Elise Stefanik, if they'd been part of the leadership over the last few years, they thought that leadership was so weak and incompetent that they didn't want any of them to take charge. Because I think Gaetz would say this. Can you imagine Kevin McCarthy going into negotiations with the White House and trying to get anything done? I think that is compelling to a lot of people who cover Congress, and that was compelling to a lot of Republicans. They just said, okay, this guy is going to be the leader. We're going to extract whatever we can from him because we know how weak he is. That was their approach. And I think, again, we're waiting for the rules. We're not sure exactly what they got, but that was their strategy, and it was a smart strategy.
It's interesting. I'm thinking about this reporting we saw come out of Congress at the end of the week from the Washington Post that talked about the idea that actually Mark Meadows was whipping votes against Kevin McCarthy. That seemed pretty incredible.
Yeah, he just is not somebody who has accrued a ton of, I wouldn't even say goodwill, I would just say respect in the conservative movement. I was looking at, you know, CBS's polling that came out over the weekend with their Sunday shows. Like, one of the questions they asked people was, what did you think of this House leadership fight? Obviously, maybe you can guess, most Americans said, oh, I didn't like it. I think 55-45, right. Nope, didn't approve. Most Republicans and like this, and a huge majority of Trump voters did approve of it. They really did like the process. They're of the mind that there is a existential threat to America really every day that Joe Biden is in office, that Republicans should be using every tool they have to stop what Biden is doing, and that McCarthy is going to give up on stuff. And when I was talking about the members who had no faith in the leadership, every time a deal is cut, they would blame the Republican leadership for cutting that deal.
Right.
So Brian Mass from Florida, who put this to me first, I think he kind of repeated it when he went on some TV shows, was the base did not like the leadership in either house. And not because they had a plan in mind that those guys should have executed. They just didn't like to watch them lose. They had, I think, a substantive disagreement with how Mitch McConnell handled the last year. I mean, McConnell's approach to the Senate was to block the big things that the left wanted, which you could do that because the filibuster exists. That wasn't that hard. And to let a few things through to help his members lower the salience of some of these fights, right? So the infrastructure bill passes because in McConnell's mind, if you pass the infrastructure bill, there's not going to be another spending bill. He looks like a genius for a couple months, then he doesn't.
Right.
And what Mass is saying is our base is angry with Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan. It's not angry with Kevin McCarthy. It just lumps him in with those people. And the opponents knew that. They knew who Kevin McCarthy is, and they knew that who did what. They just said, this guy is a non-entity who's going to get rolled the same way as the other guys we don't like. And so that's
right.
McCarthy as Speaker so far, I think, he put this down by giving rebels a lot of stuff that we don't know all the details of, but also by promising to be just a conservative speaker. He's not introducing himself the way that Boehner did, the way that Ryan to an extent did, the way that he came in basically as the leader in tandem with a caucus that has about as much power as he does, just of saying, okay, we didn't have a very good 2022 election, but we see a mandate for what we're running on. So we're going to pass House versions of all the conservative stuff that wasn't that popular in the midterm.
Yeah, so that actually gets to our next question. We're going to pass House versions of the stuff that wasn't that popular in the midterm. They barely eked out a win. He has a 4-seat majority. The midterms obviously are not the presidentials, but we saw, you know, the general feeling was that none of Trump's swing state candidates won. They only won in these very red states where, you know, it was kind of baked in that they were going to go red. So I think it's interesting that the Republicans didn't have a moment of like, well, it seems like some of this isn't so popular. I mean, if you think about the House, like someone like Nancy Mace, you send a Nancy Mace to the suburbs, she can sell this Republican Party in a way that Trump couldn't, but they don't seem to be interested in that. Not that I'm a fan of anyone in this, but just more that they're just going full Trump again.
Well, but what is it that people say they won? I mean, Democrats did lose the House by not as many votes, not as many votes as they thought. I mean, they really came within like 8,000 votes of holding on to the thing. So what did voters say that they were voting Republican for? It was concerns about the economy. It was concerns about inflation. There's a lot of issues where Biden is not popular, where most people think he's not doing a good job. They're mostly economic. The immigration, it has been weak. So they have a few areas where not even just the Republican position, but where the incumbent Democratic position is unpopular, and voters say they're willing to see a difference there. What they attack first, though, is the stuff that like Fox News talks the most about, which is IRS agents. Well, I mean, that's a dead letter. That's this bill that passed the House. They all get to celebrate they passed it. It's not going to get picked up by the Senate. They're in the same position that House Democrats were in 2019, where you can pass a bill, it'll get laughed out of the Senate. You have no shot. They're going to do a lot of that. And so they're not coming in as they could have come in with some ideas that answer what voters say they're worried about. And Democrats kind of do this. Like, Democrats had a very weird 2019 because they came in with a shutdown underway, and their position was we'd like the shutdown to be over and get back to normal government without the border wall. They usually come in with an agenda of positive stuff they want to pass. Republicans didn't put that together. I'm not trying to be too pejorative or too smug about what they ran on to get McCarthy elected, but they had mentioned what's the party of the commitment to America.
Right.
I read the commitment to America. There's not details in it. There are a few things that the party has included in bills before, but it is not like as an alternative agenda that they can deliver on. They're not really even attacking that. Like it's these big themes about economic recovery. The first one being IRS agents. They're obsessed, as I talked to you, about what they can investigate from Biden in the Biden zone, whether they can investigate something related to the vice president having some classified documents in a file where they shouldn't be. They're just behaving as a normal opposition party that believes if you drag down the president and his party, then there'll be a presidential election and you can win that because they've weakened, which is the one strategy that McCarthy has talked about executing. Remember, this is the reason he wasn't speaker years ago, is because he said blatantly the Benghazi committee was great because it was hurting Hillary Clinton and making her easier to beat. Like, that's kind of like they're not really doing much to contradict this idea that is what they're going to do with the majority.
Right. No, I mean, that I think that's what they're going to do with the majority. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. Any rising stars you're seeing come out of this?
Well, yeah, the way that the McCarthy team ended up closing out its floor speeches, these mandatory floor speeches, that clued you into the people they would like everyone to pay attention to as the future of the party. And as it went on, it was mostly non-white members who were elected fairly recently.
Right.
Juan Cascamani from South Phoenix, like the old Gabby Giffords district, which has been kind of redrawn. Mike Garcia from L.A. County. John James from Macomb County, Michigan. That was who the party was promoting and saying there are people who are, you know, they're under 50. They have had real careers. They're not like born white guys. And you had this with Byron Donalds, who I think also fits in that zone, although he was on the conservative side. That's who they wanted to introduce. And a theme there was, we know that we are, as Republicans, this is going for years, that we are if not vulnerable, at least irritated by Democrats, like saying that we're all doing the bidding of rich white guys. Look at us. Right. We're obviously not. You guys should be worried about how much we're getting. So those are the most immediate stars who got elevated. I think within every one of the 21 Republicans who kept causing problems, I think Victoria Spartz, who ends up voting present, I'm not sure where she goes with that. She encouraged the Gates faction without really doing much to win over the McCarthy faction, her point was that it looked like McCarthy had lost the confidence of the caucus, so she wasn't going to vote for him. Not much there.
Right. She's Ukrainian too, right?
Yes. Yes. She's Ukrainian American. She has been first a supporter of whatever it takes to support Ukraine, a little more recently critical, but I don't think her stock rose because of this. I do think most of the conservatives, working on this, their stock within the movement increased. Remember, I was point in that poll, most conservatives looked at this and said, great. I think you can draw a line from there to say, if you're a conservative, your opinion of Matt Gaetz is higher now than it was a month ago, because right. he actually went to the Met and did something he delivered on. And these guys are also using conservative media very effectively to talk directly to those people and make fun of how the media covers this. I think that helped them a lot.
So you think the winners here are like a Matt Gaetz and a Lauren Boebert?
Yeah, I think the stars were some people elevated by the leadership to say, okay, the media is paying attention to the House floor. These new, young, diverse stars are in the forefront of what our party stands for. And the people who won more immediately are the holdouts. Not all of them. I mean, but Paul Gosar being somebody that McCarthy has to deal with, that's new for Paul Gosar. He went from somebody that Boehner and Ryan just kind of were annoyed by and didn't have to genuflect to somebody right. who can go into a room and they can peel off his vote. He's more relevant now. He's just objectively more relevant. Marjorie Taylor Greene is more relevant in the process. I think has not a ton yet. I mean, just in my monitoring of conservative media, I haven't seen people fully rebelling against her for dealing with leadership. But she now has the selfies with her and Kevin McCarthy and lots of coverage of how she's responsible for settling this fight inside the party. That is an enhancement of her role, which McCarthy signed off on. So I think they were enhanced a lot by this. A lot of the new members who I think were Republicans were happier to like deal with and talk about. A lot of these guys who got elected in, you know, the New York City suburbs, etc., were just annoyed. I mean, they spent the whole week just giving quotes to people like me about how irritating this all was. I don't think they've gained much from it yet.
So McCarthy has tacked real MAGA, right? He was already MAGA, whatever, with whatever spinelessness he believes, but he tacked even more MAGA. But here's a question for you now. Some of these more middle of the road congressmen who are Republicans, but, you know, one in the New York City suburbs and in California, those guys, is this, you know, a kind of West Wing wish casting, or do you think that there's a world in which McCarthy gets out there enough that these more centrist Republicans decide on a unity candidate? Or you think that'll never happen?
Are you talking about in the future?
In the future. Yeah. Or if that just, if it sets up, or if there's some, if you feel like there's some, or if that's just complete wish casting.
I think it's possible.
Because the numbers are so tight and you'd only need, I mean, I'm just thinking of the math, not of the psychology.
The numbers are tight. You had in 2022, you had no change in the special elections for the rest of the year, but you did have vacancies and things that made the margins closer. I feel like you need an inciting event for this. You'd need some sort of absolute stasis over the debt limit for that conversation to start again. But what would happen is there is a vote and the chair is vacated, vote to vacate the chair, and McCarthy doesn't have the support because of some crisis going on. That's much easier to imagine for McCarthy right now than it is for any recent modern speaker. I mean, there was a motion to vacate the chair when Boehner was speaker over much less, over some of these issues, over we don't trust this guy is going as hard as we would in preventing a deal from being cut to raise spending. We know what tools exist, and everyone in the House now knows what tools exist to drag this out. And that's not crazy. I don't think it would be McCarthy. The problem is in a presidential cycle, Republicans who will be willing to vote for some compromise speaker who's not McCarthy, they'd have to look back at their districts and think about what's coming to them in primaries if they ditch this speaker in favor of one who's going to deal with Democrats and, let's say, for example, raise the debt limit without a ton of concessions. I feel like that would be a huge crisis for the party, but I wouldn't rule it out. Because there are, I mean, we identified, not just me and my colleagues, but everyone around the Hill, identified, you know, a couple dozen Republicans who are so exhausted by the holdouts that they were at least open to this. Like guys like Don Bacon in Omaha, who keep winning their elections and running well ahead of Trump. They don't have people on a short leash, but they've said here's what I would love for this speakership our agenda to look like. I think some of this can be mollified by the committee investigations, the things the party actually is delivering on. I think they're feeling better because it was so embarrassing last week for them to go through this. But yeah, the conditions are there for some crisis to unfold. Or people say, what about these tools we put down when we let McCarthy become speaker? Let's just pick them up and do it again.
Right, exactly. Dave, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back. I think there's going to be a lot of shit going down every day.
I think so. Yeah, and I really think it's good to not like hyperventilate about this and say like, oh gosh, they're in disarray. Like, what is the disarray driving towards? Because the reason this happened is because Gates had all understood you could create a problem for the leadership and get a lot of what you wanted. So I think the question is, all right, now that everyone knows that, what happens next? So yes, there'll be stuff for us to talk about in this zone. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Molly Jungfast.
Jesse Cannon.
So Molly, as you know, we haven't had a moment of fuckery on this podcast for the last 2 weeks. And some people may have suspected this is because there was a vacation, but I really like to think of this as we were sitting Shiva. Since we lost a reoccurring character on our podcast together, your favorite congressman, Louis Gohmert, sometimes known as My Louis by you, is no longer with us. How are you feeling? I've been meaning to do a wellness check.
I'm very conflicted because there are a lot of very stupid new members of Congress. There are some very stupid returning members of Congress, like Lauren Boebert and MTG. There are some very stupid people who are now committee chairs. So I'm very conflicted because I do feel that the moron quotient has not dropped.
Yes,
and in that
yes,
way, I'm relieved. But I also feel a little bit sad because my incredibly racist Texas judge, who is a fucking moron, is no longer in Congress.
Well, I'm glad you're handling it okay, but I thought it was nice since the Republicans are so inept, you got a few extra days with them since none of the new Congress could get sworn in. But since this is our first moment of fuckery since the swearing in and him officially being gone, I prepared for you today a 12-gun salute to Louis's dumbest moments. Are you ready?
Oh, I was born ready for this.
Okay, first I'd like to start with when he thought the Obama administration was staffed by the Muslim Brotherhood.
I mean, who among us?
Who among us didn't think that, yes?
This administration has so many Muslim Brotherhood members that have influence that they just are making wrong decisions for America.
I'm telling you, if only.
How about the time he very accurately predicted that socialized health care would make kill lists for seniors?
Been battling this socialist health care, the nationalization of health care, that is going to absolutely kill senior citizens. They'll put them on lists and force them to die early.
We call that death panels for CUNY.
Now, this one, I can't play a clip, but my lovely girlfriend, Lauren, would never forgive me if I didn't mention her favorite Louisism when his tooth fell out mid-press conference shortly after the 2020 election. But next we have the time he said bestiality and necrophilia sound like fun.
Who among us?
If you're oriented toward animals, bestiality, then, you know, that's not something that could be used, held against you, or any bias be held against you for that, which means you'd have to strike any laws against bestiality. If you're oriented toward corpses, toward children, you know, there are all kinds of perversions, what most of us would call perversions. Some would say it sounds like fun.
Nice. He had a way with words. I mean, it's good because you never think of Congress. You really want your local congressman to weigh in on necrophilia. That's one of the main things you want Congress working on.
How about when he told us all how he used to handle outbursts at his court when he was a judge?
I had one guy that was particularly out of line, and I warned him 3 times, and then we duct taped his head, and we didn't hear from him until it was his turn to talk. And
that's
then
when you were a judge?
That was when I was a judge of felony court.
That didn't go in your...
I'm sorry. Imagine having Louis Gohmert decide your future.
And duct tape you up to shut you up.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Doesn't sound fun.
But who can forget when he wouldn't stop banging on the desk because he didn't like a witness saying Bill Barr lies, and they had to ask to remove him from the committee?
Either we have rules or we don't.
Mr. Chairman, there's not order in the room. There's a banging.
No, there's certainly not.
Mr. Chairman, would you have Gene Krupa removed?
The gentleman, the witness will conclude.
Then there was the time that he harassed Peter Strzok while he was on the witness stand.
How many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness is always an issue. Mr. Chairman,
this is an intolerable harassment of the witness.
What is wrong with that? You need your medication.
Not many congressmen have been told they need their medication while in the middle of a hearing.
You know, I want to, as we say goodbye to this incredible racist idiot who never should have gotten as far as he did, a testament really, truly to a culture that honors white men above all else.
Yes.
I would like to say goodbye, sweet moron. Goodbye.
Well, I'm glad you did that because we have one last one that I'm going to give four shots to because it was so dumb when he asked Eric Holder to not cast aspersions on his asparagus.
Oh, the best.
The gentleman is the chairman.
Aspersions on my asparagus.
The chairman.
Aspersions on my asparagus.
Well, I think what's important about that is Louis Gohmert got the laughs, just not intentionally. That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.